response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
All right, so we're going to go through this really quickly. So Rob just found this. Fox says that the preliminary ratings for the United States game last night, the average is 24.4 million viewers. It also peaked at 31.8 million viewers. This is the most watched soccer telecast in the history of American soccer. So people are very much engaged watching this. Rob, if you want to put this into what it would have meant last year, this would have made it the 10th most watched sporting event last year. It would have been directly behind the Sunday night football game between the Lions and the Chiefs. That did 24.7 million viewers. So it would have been the 10th most watched sporting event last year.
That's a big number for that match.
A huge number, you would have to assume the number is going to get bigger now. Monday night, 7 o'clock.
Bigger opponent.
Better team. Mm-hmm. The controversy about the red card. Yeah, you would have to assume that it is going to probably average into the 30s, and it will probably be top five based on last year. So these were the games that were rated ahead of it. So I just told you, so number 9 last year was the Sunday night football game between the Lions and the Chiefs. There was a Thursday game. I'm assuming this was the Thanksgiving Thursday game between Cincinnati and Baltimore. I'm just assuming that was the late game.
Yes, that was the late game that night.
Sunday night football, Minnesota against Detroit. There was a playoff game between Tampa Bay and Washington. There was a Monday night football, Game 7 of the World Series last year between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. Washington and Detroit. There were a couple of playoff games. Buffalo and Baltimore, Kansas City and Buffalo in the AFC Championship game, and Philadelphia and Kansas City. Those were the most watched sporting events back in 2025.
So you think Monday this has a chance to end in the top five based on last year's numbers?
Yeah. I think it will be a noticeable improvement. If you were telling me that from the knockout round, it went from 18 to 24, and now you are getting deeper into the tournament, yeah, I expect them to be somewhere in the 35 to 40 range.
35 to 40 is a huge number. I mean, I guess peaking at 31, it's definitely possible.
I mean, you just got to think about it, I think, from this perspective. I think they needed a controversy. Like, it's already patriotism, right? Like, it's already United States, America, 250 coming up. Like, people are already feeling very patriotic about it. Rob, they have a real officiating controversy. Everybody is talking about it today. Everybody is discussing it, debating it. Do you think it was a red card? Like, what was the last soccer topic that we had this way? What was the last soccer topic where the first thing on anybody's sports show is either a massive NBA trade, a lot of people led with that today, or what happened last night in the United States game? And you can lead with that because everybody saw it now at this point. If you're getting a top 10 rating for the entire year, yeah, you can talk soccer now. And it's a legitimate controversy, a controversy, Rob, in which everybody can participate. You don't got to be the biggest soccer fan in the world to see that, hear that he was ejected from the game, now know that he can't play in the next game, and now you got real water cooler conversation. Hey, they're advancing. They're playing well. Their best player is not going to play. What do you think is going to happen in the next game? Where is the next game? When is it going to happen? Like, we already thought the buzz was growing about this team. You now throw in a little bit of controversy, and yes, it is going to create a very, very big impact on Monday night.
Let me ask you a question. I'm not trying to get too deep into a ratings conversation here, but
we're already here.
If they win on Monday, they play Friday the 10th. That game is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you think, despite that game being bigger stakes, everything, will it be lower rated because of what time it is on television?
That's a great question.
Because Spain's a bigger draw than Belgium, and in theory they'll have Balogun back, and it's the knockout round, and a Friday is basically the weekend, but it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time.
I don't want to wiggle out of it. But I don't know if we have a comparison for it to anything else. I think it is safe to say that will be the most important sporting event in our country's history that happened during the day. I mean, we have day events, but it's the first round of the NCAA tournament. Now, it's cool. It's great. I mean, nobody thinks the first round game is the biggest game you've ever seen before. Like, the biggest soccer game in American history would then happen during the day. It's just hard to know what it is. I'm assuming, especially if it's on a Friday, a lot of people are taking off early that day. Like, a lot of people are taking a half day, not coming in after lunch and watching it. So I wish I had a better answer. I wish I had like a better comparison for it. But I mean, massive NFL games don't happen on Friday at 2 o'clock. You know what I mean? Massive NBA games don't happen there. The most important baseball games don't happen in the middle of the day. So I don't know what kind of rating it could do on Friday. I'm assuming it would do a phenomenal rating. I mean, if it's the United States against Spain, yeah, everybody's going to be watching it in the most important soccer game that we've had. I don't know what the ratings are going to be because it's so unprecedented.
It is, like, I was trying to think, like, the Olympics don't really pull that level of viewership, and they sometimes during the day. You're right. We do not have a one-for-one comparison. It would be fascinating to see, but 24.4 million viewers, just
it's a huge number.
It's enormous. Yeah. We were talking about they might break 20. They came near 25.
Yeah, I mean, I told you this is I really feel like the United States rallies around soccer in a way that we don't really rally around any other national team that we have. Like, we could look up the ratings for the United States in basketball, and it's like players that you know. America doesn't rally around its basketball team like that. America doesn't rally around gymnastics like this. It doesn't rally around all of these other sports. There is something very different about the relationship between our country and soccer. And I genuinely think it is the only sport in which we view ourselves as the underdog. So everybody can get behind supporting America. Everybody can also can get behind the idea of supporting a underdog. And if you can combine both of those things into one powerful mix like it is, you create the scenario that you have right now with the United States. So people, I think, are looking forward to, oh, we're being counted out now by the world. Like, they are underdogs for the first time in this tournament coming up on Monday. They will be noticeable underdogs if they win on Monday on Friday against Spain. Noticeable. They'll be a minus, or they'll be a plus 400. They'll be a plus 450. Not a lot of people internationally will give the United States a chance on Friday, which you already know will only fuel people even more to support America in that scenario. But yeah, this goes to prove it. The relationship between the U.S. and its soccer team, it is a very unique relationship that we have.
Some of the text line asked, and I'm trying to look it up real quick, when the U.S. played Canada for gold in the Olympics. Now, that was a Sunday morning, so it's a Sunday.
Yeah, I can pull it up here. Keep talking, I'll pull it up.
Because I'm trying to, again, that's going to be different because that was a Sunday morning. It was a weekend. It was NBC, big NBC had it. So I think the numbers will be different. But I am curious, a gold medal match, what that look like by comparison?
I have it right here. It averaged 18.6 million viewers.
So this match blew past
not it. Even close. Yeah, not even close.
That shows there is
I can look up the basketball one too, because the basketball team played for gold medal as well.
True.
19.5 it averaged, the USA France game, the one where Steph just went nuclear hot. It averaged 19.5 million viewers and peaked at 22.7.
So this match, which mattered far less than those,
also dwarfed that too.
Yeah.
Also dwarfed that too. Two sports that everybody agrees is more popular in America than soccer is. Hockey is more popular.
I think soccer is more popular than hockey, but I think they're 4A, 4B.
And basketball.
Basketball,
which
definitely.
Agreed, it's very different early in the morning. The next Olympics will be a little bit different. It's in the United States. It's in Los Angeles. Wimby will be a more known product at that point. I mean, it'll probably do a little bit better the next time. But yeah, I mean, there's no denying that number. That is a massive, massive number. Again, it would have been one of the 10 most watched sporting events last year. It will be one of the 10 most watched sporting events this year. If they continue to advance, we're starting to creep into it'll be top five or real close to what the AFC-NFC championship game are that are always 2 and 3 behind the Super Bowl. Everybody watches those games.
And this is where the NFL is king. Those games are on the weekend, which I know they're during the day, but just how the NFL is king. This was a weekday night. This was a Wednesday night. This is not a usual night where people go out and do something, but they were out to watch the United States men's national team.
So we'll keep talking a little bit of World Cup here coming up on the other side here. There's a lot to get into with the World Cup. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.
Rob, before we get back to soccer, the New York Post is reporting Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce are already married, according to multiple sources. Although they will have the big party, you guys already know about that, more than 1,000 friends, families, they are having that at Madison Square Garden, a rehearsal dinner, all of those things. They are reporting that they have already been married. Quote, we are told that the couple have already exchanged vows in front of a very tiny group of loved ones. Quote, they are already married, a source in the know tells us. A well-placed music insider based in Nashville said the city is abuzz because, quote, both are already legally married. There's some more legalese. I don't think anybody cares about in this, but this is kind of what I said yesterday when we had this conversation. Now, they are going through with the big party at Madison Square Garden, but it just felt like we were getting too much information, and I felt like with how private their relationship has been for the most part, that now we just wouldn't find out all of this information at the last second when it was time for them to get married. So, I think they handled it right if that's what they decided to do. They got married somewhere private. And now, since everybody couldn't be there, hey, it's 4th of July weekend. Why don't we throw our big party here so everybody can come celebrate the actual marriage of things? That actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, we disagreed a little bit, but this is kind of like, I think we both end up right here. I thought they may have been legally married before and like done like a little ceremony. And this is like the big to do. Like some people technically, you know, sign their marriage certificate before they're actually married. They did a little more than that, but they are legally married. Now it's just the big hurrah that is happening on Madison Square Garden. It's tomorrow, right? Or is it tomorrow? Or it's
tomorrow.
So that means rehearsal dinner is tonight, because I've seen videos leaking out where she's now in New York driving around.
So they're supposed to have some big rehearsal dinner today for 100 people. That's today. And then tomorrow is the big festivities, the big parties for 1,000 or more people.
How would you feel if you were made the, you know, well, the rehearsal dinner list, but didn't make the special loved ones list in Nashville. I was person 57. That sucks.
I don't think you feel any way about not being at the rehearsal dinner. I'm assuming that's
like wedding party and family. That's pretty commonplace.
Yeah, that's the one to me that's probably close teammates, their wives, family, etc. Like, I don't think Jay-Z and Beyonce are at the rehearsal dinner, but they are going to be at the celebration on Friday, for example. So, yeah, I don't have any issues with that. I mean, so, obviously, I don't have any issues with it, but I'm just saying that's how I would guess they are playing it. I'm guessing that, you know, Noah Gray and his wife are at the rehearsal dinner.
I actually don't think they made it. I bet rehearsal dinner of people we know is just Jason, Kylie, Patrick, and Brittany. If you're telling me it's 100, because, like, as someone who's been through this process,
yeah, no, it makes sense.
Your rehearsal dinner is basically just your wedding party and your family.
You also have 100 people, though. 100 people is a lot of people to have dinner with.
It's a big rehearsal dinner, yeah.
You got a rehearsal dinner with like 24 people. But 100 people is a lot.
But also, doesn't Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce each carry like 8 bridesmaids? So that right there gets like 30 aside. So yeah, that number jumps up pretty quick.
I saw Rob earlier today. He was on Polymarket, and he was looking at odds on who was betting who was in the wedding party. I had to tell Rob that you got to put your phone down.
Gigi Hadid, -3,000.
That's what I had to tell Rob. I had to tell Rob to put his phone down. I didn't know what Rob was doing. I didn't know what he was thinking about. He was telling me it was good odds. It was crazy as what Rob had going on. All right, let's get back to the top story. Sure, by now you guys have seen the play. Flo Balgan, he is the star player for the United States. Yesterday, he got a red card, so that means he was out for the remainder of the game. I believe this happened at the 65th minute, so he was out for the rest of the game. It also means that he is out for the next game. So Monday's game against Belgium, He will not be eligible to participate. Basically, everybody disagrees with this call. Here is Bradley Wright. He was on SportsCenter.
It was a terrible call. I think when you slow the video down and you see the freeze frame, it looks very dangerous. You see Balogun studs on the back of the, you know, the opposition's, let's say, calf. But it was no malicious intent in this tackle. It's a tangle of feet. Balogun's the one that's unfortunate, ends up scraping on the back of the calf, and it looks worse than it actually was. He wasn't even trying to make a tackle. You have to feel for the US squad. You have to feel for Flo Balogun. He's an important player, and now he misses the next game. It's a shame. I think they got the call wrong there.
Maybe this is me trying to simplify this play way more than I need to simplify it. I can only see it through my basketball, football, baseball brain. You know, the sports that I watch and follow. Knowing how important a red card is and knowing the weight that a red card carries, to me, you got to be 1,000% certain if you are going to make that level of decision. If you're going to pull a red card, it has to appear to be dirty to me. We watch football. I think we can agree there's some penalties that you understand why they got a 15-yard penalty. You hit them a little bit early. You hit them late. You hit them. Hey, that's a 15-yard penalty. Call roughing the passer. Pick the flag up and let's continue play. But to think that that hit should warrant you being ejected from the game, to me, just has to have a higher threshold. Because you're thinking about the impact that that has on the outcome and the possible result of the game and what it means. And in soccer, this is not just you can't play for the rest of this game. No, it means you're out for the game that we are currently playing and you are not eligible for the next game. So if you're going to pull a red card, you gotta know the intent. You got to be able to see it. You got to, in my opinion, think that this is a dirty play. This is a uncalled for, unnecessary play. Like, there's a difference to me between a dangerous basketball foul and a hard playoff foul. Hey, the guy's going up for a dunk and you foul him. Hey, I'm cool with that. But we know you can't push the guy out of the air when he's going up for a layup. Hey, you tried to hurt the guy. That's, to me, warranted of you being ejected from the game. I just didn't see anything in here that would get to the level of he should be removed for the final 35 minutes of this game and the United States should be without their best player in the round of 16. I was just really surprised that that got called last night.
It was legitimately stunning to me. I believe it was Taylor Twellman that said this, and maybe in the cup, Bradley Wright Phillips is the same thing. If you were to take a still photo of Balogun landing on the defender's leg, it does look bad. It looks like there is a chance the player can get hurt. And by definition, a chance for a player getting hurt is a red. But when we watch it in, you know, regular speed, or we watch it as a video and not a still clip, you get the idea that it is accidental contact. If you want to give him a yellow because it does end up being a play that could potentially hurt a player, I don't think I'd argue with you. I might be a little frustrated, but I don't think I'd argue with you. The fact that we use still shots and super duper slow-mo from VAR to identify that as, and their logic was, a play that could end up hurting a player is just nonsensical to me. He is playing the ball. He is trying to make a play on the ball. He just ends up getting his foot on the guy's leg. It is a foul. It is not a red card. And to go back and review it in super slow motion with still photos just did a disservice to the United States and to Balogun in particular.
A lot of people are making this point. I don't know enough about it. Somebody says, with FIFA being so corrupt, has no one brought up the fact that the referee could have been paid? Somebody else said, FIFA is corrupt and everybody knows it. Now, I'm not saying that these things don't happen. I don't got no issue with, you know, a little conspiracy theory. I don't really know if it's in the, I don't know if it's in FIFA's interest right now to not protect the United States. It's in the U.S. They're getting incredible ratings. I don't know why FIFA would gang up on the U.S., especially going up against Bosnia. Again, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I don't watch nearly enough soccer. And I heard that this ref, he was doing some shady stuff in the past. I don't even know why he should be able to be a part of the World Cup if he's got some shady things in his past. But I just, if you're going to tell me it's a conspiracy with FIFA, which I'm assuming they've had conspiracies before, I don't really know why this would be the time to pick on the United States when the United States is the host country in this.
I'm all for a good conspiracy theory. Like, you know, put on a tinfoil hat. Let's do it. The ref does have a dicey background from his time, you know, doing games in Brazil. I'll say this. If you want a conspiracy theory, do you know what I think isn't annoying? Is that Messi had a very similar play at Arrowhead against Algeria. And they
That's
reviewed
sports, though.
Yeah, but they went to VAR and they called nothing. You're telling me Flo Balogun has the exact same play VAR as red? They should have both been yellow or both been red or both been nothing. We need a little consistency from VAR.
I don't disagree with you. I do not. I'm not here to I want you to know we're all on the same side here. I don't think that should have been a red card. All I'm saying is we watch enough sports to know if Patrick Mahomes does something and Jordan Love does something, the NFL is much more likely to look past Patrick Mahomes doing it and then penalize Jordan Love for it. That's all I'm saying. So I don't disagree with you. If you were showing me a play in which Lionel Messi does something, yeah, I'm not surprised that they didn't give Lionel Messi a red card. I'm not surprised. What would Lionel Messi have to do to get a red card in their next game? What would he have to do?
The threshold is higher, I would say that.
He'd have to bicycle kick somebody in the face in order for them to give him a red card. He is their marquee star, and he could be in his final World Cup game. What would he need to do to be ejected from the game? And not just that game. You can't play in the next game. At that point, you have eliminated Argentina. You eliminated them. They're done. Their time is over. It was great. So, yeah, I'm just saying is I'm not surprised that's the case to me. I'm not surprised that there are a little bit different rules for Lionel Messi than there are for everybody else. We all watch enough sports. You know, you and I both know, you got to really do something egregious for them to give LeBron his last foul to foul him out of the game. You better go, you got to really earn it. We watch sports. We all laugh about Allen Fieldhouse and the officiating and late. What do you got to do late in the game to get a call at Allen Fieldhouse? I'm just saying that to me makes a lot of sense to me that they are picking favorites when it comes to stars in critical moments.
That's probably fair. I mean, for your answer,
we all laugh about Allen Fieldhouse and ha 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 late in that game. Rob, you and I were at that game, Kansas versus TCU. They were not calling fouls on Kansas the last 3 minutes of that game.
It's true. You asked about what would happen, and his last World Cup ever, Zinedine Zidane had to headbutt a guy, and they sent him a red card.
He didn't even accidentally headbutt the guy.
That was like a slip and fall. It was like I'm going to turn around and get you in the chest.
Didn't they give somebody a red card for whispering to another guy a couple of days ago? Okay. I just saw the clip, so I could be
they
wrong.
They did. It was in the Mexico match.
He just whispered to the guy.
I don't know why, and maybe someone knows the why. Maybe there's some sort of geopolitical thing with this gesture, and I just don't know. But FIFA, before this World Cup, announced that if you cover your mouth with your hand in this gesture, if you're watching on the YouTube stream, if you do this gesture, it is an automatic red.
What?
So if you notice when they're like talking about like, hey, we're going to try to kick it here on a set piece, they always keep their hand open as opposed to because this is an automatic red. I mean,
I understand what you're saying, but what you're saying doesn't make any sense.
Like I said, maybe there's some it's someone knows the geopolitical breakdown of how that's a gesture that is bad that I just don't know. Maybe it's the middle finger in other countries. I don't know, but they definitely said you can't do that. So in the Mexico
match.
You think
that's equivalent to the middle finger?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to say. That's wild to me. In Paraguay, like you got to cover your mouth to talk to somebody. That's like equivalent to flipping somebody off.
It has to be because why else would you outlaw this? What,
I don't know.
What is this that they have to outlaw it?
I don't know. They probably cover their mouth to be saying some wild stuff out there.
It's auto red because it happened in the Mexico-Ecuador match.
I know.
Match.
I saw the guy do that and then the other guy started snitching. I was like, why are you doing that? Somebody said, have you seen the headbutt? No, I have seen the headbutt. That was in the World Cup final, I remember.
It was in the final. It was like in the 75th minute, too. Bam! Yeah.
That was a World Cup final. The guy, I remember he was like walking past them. Next thing you know, he just turns around and then just, boom, headbutted the guy. Guy just fell to the ground. That's what Messi would have to do to get a red card. That's what Messi would have to do.
Or put his hand over his mouth.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that. Even then, I feel like they might warn him. You know what I mean? Like, even then, they might go over like, hey, you know you can't do that, right? Like, you know you can't do that. You cannot participate in that. All right, let's hear more about this red card. I will say, I feel this is the most unified we've ever been about a call. Maybe it's because it's the United States. Rob, you're not even seeing people play devil's advocate on the text line. And there's one thing the text line loves to do. It's play devil's advocate. Well, what about everybody appears to be on the same side with this call, which either means all of us are homers when it comes to this because of the U.S. or this is one of the worst calls we've ever seen. I feel like there's only two possibilities. Rob, have you seen, you follow way more soccer people than I do. I don't think other than Ali Trost, I don't think I follow anybody else to cover soccer. Nate Mukady, that might be it. I haven't seen one opposing viewpoint to this. I haven't seen one person like, hey, you know what? That actually really was a red card. I haven't seen one person say, hey, you guys are looking at this incorrectly. This is what makes it a red card. Everybody seems to be united. We can't get America united about anything. We can't about a soccer penalty. The World Cup is here changing lives. Here's the manager for the U.S.
For me, it's about to see the intention. If the intention is to damage the opponent, okay, I understand. But that never was, because a normal action in football that you are, you know, fighting for the ball and your feet land, no? That was maybe a little bit tough, the scene to watch, but I think never was intentional. I think, for me, that action never was, it's never a red card, never.
I just like that we are all standing arms in arms to be like, you know what, that's a really bad call. I don't feel like we've been on this board, like on this same page with a bad call since the pass interference in the NFC Championship game. Like, if you could be the biggest Rams fan ever, even you got to realize, hey, man, that's pass interference. I don't know what to tell you. Look, he just NFL blitz tackled him before the ball got there. This is as in line we've all been since then. So it's been a while. It's been a while since we've all been on the same team about something. So that was the manager you just heard. Here is Mark Clattenburg. He was on Fox. He was on the broadcast. Here he is talking about the play.
Yeah, when I watched this in real speed, I didn't think it was much. I thought it was just a coming together of two players. And what you do see is that Balogun's challenge does catch his opponent on the back of the leg. And then when it comes down, it catches his ankle. And that's when the twist of the Bosnia-Herzegovina player's foot twists underneath him. The problem you've got is, to reach a criteria of the red card, it has to be some speed, there has to be some force, and there has to be some malice. This lacked that. But what it does have, which is what the element of the VAR is hiding behind, is it endangers the safety of the opponent because of that foot-on-foot challenge, which could have acted and ended with a broken ankle. So what they've done is they've looked at the consequence of the challenge. However, in my opinion, this didn't endanger the safety of the opponent. Balogun doesn't even look for the foul. It's one of them where it happens in a split second. He puts his foot down and catches the opponent. It was an accidental challenge. And for me, this did not reach the criteria of a red card, and it shouldn't have been a VAR intervention.
This is the whole part about it to me, just as a, I mean, I'm a soccer diehard, you know? I mean, what would you classify as somebody who's a diehard? Rob, you're a diehard, right? Do you have a favorite team?
Multiple.
Do you watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow it? Same as me. I'm a soccer diehard.
The amount of times you've just sat down and been like, let's talk some EPL in the office is crazy.
Oh, no. I'm an international diehard.
Oh, there you go.
I'm an international diehard.
You can't pronounce the team Bosnia. You used to do the half, but
yeah, Bosnia, Herzegovina.
There you go.
Herzegovina. Yeah. I watched him yesterday very intently. I watched that entire Bosnia game. Still couldn't tell you one player on the other team. Not a single one. I couldn't tell you one thing about them. In fact, I actually feel good about that. They were terrible. There was one thing I did learn. It's that they were terrible. They were really, really bad yesterday. I did know that. I am really surprised that that happened yesterday. Honestly, I'm very surprised that that is how the game ended. And, I mean, it would be very American for a officiating controversy to overshadow a win. That's kind of what we do really well.
Especially considering, and I understand why it has, the last 25 minutes when they were a man down, they actually played still better than Bosnia. They scored a goal. They were still on the attack. They didn't just bunker and hang on by their fingernails. They were still a great team, but that is just not the story. It's not, hey, look at this defensive effort. Look at the way they banded together down to 10 men to hold Bosnia out of goal. Well, look at the free kick by Malik Tillman. What an incredible strike. We're not talking about those things. We're about one play. That's peak America. Someone referred to it. I was talking to Cody when we were there, and he was like, it kind of reminds me of the James Bradbury play. Like, when you still shot it by the letter of the law, yeah, that's that's the call. But like, that's now the story and not what happened after the call.
Yeah, and I guess the point I was going to make about being a soccer diehard is that I don't really understand is that's like hard for me to justify with the other sports that I watch. This play was not called a foul in real time. It was not called a foul. So you're telling me these are the best officials in the world. They saw this play in real time, did nothing about it. It was a regular play. We thought the guy, you know, they do a lot of flopping in soccer. I would just love to understand how we go from nothing being called on the field to now this leveling up to be a red card in this. Just think about what that would be in if we were watching basketball. If we've all watched basketball and a guy goes up for a foul and it just ends up being a no call, you're sitting there screaming like, what? Why? Why'd you not call that? It ends up being a no call. They then go to the board and they say, oh, you know what, Tyron Stokes, you're actually out of the game. What? How? Like, we're not just going to shoot regular free throws here? Like, you can't just go back, assess a foul, and then we can just shoot free throws and we can just move on? Like, how we go from zero to 100 as fast as it did when there is a very easy, if they call that a yellow card, nobody is talking about that today. I don't even think it's a controversy of, do you think it could have been a red card? Like, I don't even think that's the conversation. If they just call that a yellow card, I think most people would say, oh, I understand. Balogun needs to be careful in the next game because if you get two yellow cards, it turns into a red and then you get eliminated. I think most people would consider that to be a fair outcome. But I think why it's kind of reached this level is the fact that nothing was called. It then gets called that. You then see a play where very similar it happens. They didn't end up calling a foul on him. It just ends up being this perfect combination of everything where the outcome seems very unfair towards the United States just as the U.S. starts cooking. We get good at soccer. We start beating up on you in your game. You're mad we're doing it. So now you want to remove our best player from the game. That is kind of what it feels like.
For a cross-sport analogy, you said, like, looking at the other sports you watch, do you know what the best analogy is? Remember when they first started instituting targeting in college football? And it was big hit, no flag on the field, and all of a sudden they'd go review it and toss a guy out. That there was a time in college football we handled targeting bad. Like, we were bad at it as a country with targeting. And I understand the why, but they did not do a good job of legislating it. That's what happened today. There was no foul called. In real time, it looked like, you know, as Mark Klattenberg said, two players ramming into each other. It happens that way. We're moving on. We're playing soccer. They then went to VAR and super slow-mo said, oh, actually turns out you're out of here and you're not playing in the Belgium match.
Text line 913-586-7965. We'll get back to the World Cup coming up at the top of the hour. The ratings are out, and let me tell you, it did a phenomenal number on television. This is directly from Fox Sports PR. The most watched soccer telecast in the history of English language television. A peak audience of 31.8 million viewers. Preliminary numbers, 24.4 million viewers tuned into the game yesterday. If you look at that average, that would have made it the 10th most watched sporting event back in 2025. I'm sure the U.S. will continue to do exceptional numbers when it comes to the broadcast. We'll get back to the World Cup coming up at the top of the hour. There is one thing that I think the World Cup is making people lose sight of, lose track of. I'll tell you what that is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison and Rob Brenton.
You losers is what you are.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in a little bit, we are going to play for you guys what the commissioner of the MLS said that the MLS needs to do to capitalize on all the soccer momentum that is currently happening in regards to the World Cup. We'll get to that coming up in the hits coming up in just a bit. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here. Rob is here as well. This is our last show this week. We are off tomorrow because of the holiday. You know what? We get a company day off like everybody else. We'll be back on Monday, though. to get you ready for the United States game as they are going up against Belgium. Rob, before we move forward, I do have to ask you this question. As you're taking an early look at Belgium, I didn't get a chance to watch them yesterday because I don't know how to work the television, but they were down 2-0 to Congo, and then they roared back and they won that game 3-2. How are you feeling heading into the matchup between the U.S. and Belgium coming up on Monday?
If a confidence level was a 0-10, 10 being the most confident, 0 being no confidence at all, I'm probably somewhere between a 6 and a 7, 6.5. Belgium has not looked good this tournament. They are a team that was viewed as, hey, they're kind of past their prime. They're playing a lot of old players that made the roster one more time. The next wave hasn't really filled in the way they anticipated. They were in jeopardy of losing their group up until the literal final match day. And then up until the 80th minute, they were down 2-0 to Senegal. They made both those things, turned those things around. They made both those things work. They won their group. But it has been tough sledding for Belgium. So I am confident the U.S. can play. Balogun's absence is a big deal, but I am confident. I am more confident than I probably should be in them taking on a European country of Belgium's caliber because of how bad Belgium has looked.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit of Royals baseball before we move back to the World Cup. All right, this is what I want to talk to you guys about. It is this. If the World Cup was not here, and we had to find other things to fill our time, I think we'd be having some serious conversations about Salvador Perez. Now, I know you guys hate when I say this, but there's a high probability that Salvi is cooked. We all love Salvi. He deserves a statue. His number should be retired. We all feel the exact same way about Salvador Perez. I can only tell you what the numbers are saying. Salvador Perez, over the last season and a half, he has a negative WAR. He has played in 236 games, and we are creeping up on 1,000 plate appearances. He is hitting .224. We already know that Salvi doesn't get on base. He is not a guy that's going to get you a lot of walks. Rob, over the last season and a half, in those 236 games, Salvi has 40 walks and almost 200 strikeouts. We know he is not the fleetest of foot. He is hitting .224. He has a .269 on base percentage and a .404 slugging percentage. Now, I don't know what you do about Salvador Perez, and I think the answer is probably nothing when it comes to Salvi. You've already paid him. He's so important to your franchise. He's so important to your organization that Salvi does deserve to go out on his own terms. And if Salvi wants to be traded at the deadline, I think you have to acquiesce to that trade. If Salvi wants to finish out his career in a Royals uniform, you only got a year and a half left on that deal. But one of the problems with the Royals offense is, as much as you want to be mad about the manager, as much as you want to be mad about all of these other things, and you are right to feel the way that you feel about those things, they have been carrying Salvador Perez offensively for the last year and a half, and they continue to put him at third. They continue to have him hit fourth. They continue to put him in the lineup every single day, and he is giving you next to nothing offensively over the last year and a half. It's over. Father Time has finally won against Salvador Perez. He lasted way longer than I think any of us thought that he was going to. We were having these conversations about Salvi 10 years ago about all the catching and the wear and tear on his body and the injury and missing a year and doing all these things. I mean, it's 2026. It's finally here. His body has broken down. I don't know how you can argue it based on the numbers.
The Royals are in big trouble if you're right. And I don't think you're wrong. I think there's a real chance that Salvador Perez's best days of baseball behind him, and it might look bad the next 18 months because they have him under a contract for their season. You mentioned the potential of a trade. If he says, trade me, the Royals have to acquiesce. Who wants him right now? What other team in baseball is like, you know what? We want a 35-year-old plus catcher who's light hitting and doesn't get on base and has another year on his contract. Who's signing up for that?
This is what I would argue, though, with Salvi. And I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that there's some great market for Salvi. Let's be realistic. But I do think it could help Salvi to go to be a part-time player. Salvi can't play every day for you. Salvi played in 155 games last year. He's played in 81 games so far this year. He plays every day for you. So if you're adding Salvi and you think that he's going to play first base or catch for you, yeah. But you're telling me that Salvi, even at this stage in his career, if he played 2-3 times a week, if he was a guy that was your backup catcher, if he was a guy that did some of those things for your team, could you get a little bit more out of it? Because I know we're talking about it's a lot of money. It's not a lot of money in baseball sense to anybody else. It just is for the Royals. They probably owe him. We're about halfway done with this season. He's got 12.5 next year. They probably owe Salvi $18 million, $17 million. That's not a lot in baseball terms for other teams in baseball. It just is because it's the Royals. I'm not making it seem like you're getting some big haul, some big coup for Salvador Perez. But I do still think as a veteran, a guy who's played in big games, a guy who's a great clubhouse guy that you can add, if you're adding Salvi and he plays for you 2 days a week, I think Salvi can have a lot of success for you. But the problem on the Royals in 2026 is they desperately need and count on Salvi. He's hitting 201 for you. He has a 241 on base percentage. You carry that, and he's played in 81 games. That guy plays for you every day. You can't continue to do that and think that you can turn your offense around with that guy as an anchor in the middle of it.
Here's the major Salvador Perez problem, because I think you actually hit on it perfectly. If he were to take that, let's call it a six-man role for a cross-board comparison, and not be an everyday player, be an off-the-bench guy, be a, you know, take a few days off, don't be the workhorse, don't be behind the plate, DH. If he was willing to be the player that you just described, I don't mind the Royals keeping him next year. But if he's not willing to be that player, the Royals are in trouble next year. But if he's willing to be that player, I want the Royals to have him and not trade him away. But if he thinks he's 2018, 2019, and that's not prime Salvi, a guy out there for 115 games a year on catcher, DH,
Salvi
first base,
has to know, though. Salvi has to know. I understand people fight it. I get it. But
the player's always the last to know.
You're right. I can't argue that. But I guess my argument would be, I think Salvi's a pretty smart individual. Salvi's also played a lot of big-time important baseball games. You know what success looks like. You know. You got a good idea. You're hitting 201. It's the 4th of July. This isn't a, oh, it's early conversation about Salvi anymore. Yeah, we could have that conversation. Oh, it's early. Let's give him some time. Man, how much more time do you got to give Salvi? I'm talking middle of the season, if that's the case. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, I'd pay to keep Salvi on the bench for one more season. Okay, fine. I'm not saying they got to get rid of Salvi. He has a no trade clause. He doesn't have to go anywhere. But if Salvi told you he's ready to be traded, I would trade Salvador Perez. But for next season, I don't care what the plan is next season. It cannot be to let Salvador Perez play in 150 games. He played in 158 games in 2024. He played in 155 games last year. He's played in 81 games so far. If it's Salvador Perez's last season, he can't be playing every day. Because we also can't complain about the roster and why they can't do these things. And he's the fourth highest paid player on the team. Bobby's one, Lugo is two, Waka's three, and Salvador Perez. He's their second highest paid position player. And you can't put him in the lineup every single day. That's part of the problem with the Royals in 2026. That's part of the offensive problem, is that guy has to play every day for you. So I'm cool with Salvi being on the team. But he's got to be Raul Ibanez now at this point. He's got to be the guy in the clubhouse that gives the motivational speeches. He can't be the guy that plays first base or catches for you every day. They got to find a way to get his bat out of the lineup, or things have to turn around drastically from where they've been for the last year and a half. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the hits. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.